Today on Family Talk.
Back to school. Now is the time of year when many parents are winding down summertime activities for their young children and helping them transition back into the school time routine. For students preparing to enter or return to college campuses, however, the back-to-school transition can often involve more than just the logistics of where to live on campus and which class schedule works best. American universities and colleges have become a flashpoint for a clash of worldviews, and more often than not, it is the Christian collegians who find their faith and values marginalized or ignored altogether. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. On today's program, we're going to review a classic Family Talk conversation featuring Dr. Dobson along with his in-studio guests, Noah Reiner and David Wheaton. Both of these men understand how tenuous the battle for Christian values has become on college campuses today. David Wheaton is a pastor, author, and former professional tennis player. He hosts the syndicated weekly radio program called The Christian Worldview. He is the author of the book, University of Destruction, Your Game Plan for Spiritual Victory on Campus. Regarding Noah Reiner, at the time of this recording, Noah was student body president of Dartmouth College. Here now is Dr. James Dobson to welcome today's guests on Family Talk.
Both these guys, I told them when they were up in my office a few minutes ago, both of them are kind of heroes of mine because I have followed them from a distance. And let me introduce them. First of all is David Wheaton. Every tennis fan out there knows the name of David Wheaton. He is one of the better tennis players in the world. At one time was number 12 on the pro circuit. And you do anything better than all but 11 of your of your colleagues, then you're doing something very well. David, I'm really glad to have you here.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Dr. Dobson.
The only bad thing I know about you is that for 1 year you went to Stanford.
Don't hold that against me.
In fact, you were there in 1988, mm-hmm. and you guys won the NC2A championship in tennis, didn't you?
We did. That was a highlight. You know, I went to college. I started in 87, and I turned pro after my freshman year, actually. But during the year I was there, our team was fortunate enough to win the national title.
Well, I want to talk to you about, seriously, about that mm-hmm. choice of going to a big university and the experience of being there and why you left after 1 year. Obviously, it was to join the Pro Tour, but there's more to it than that.
Yes, there is. I went for 1 year, and the reason I left was because of for tennis. I was the number one ranked junior in America going into college. I had done very well. I'd won the U.S. Open junior, and most of my peers at the time were turning professional, like Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi, Michael Chang, Jim Courier. These are the guys I was competing against.
Yeah, you were
in the
part
juniors.
Of a great
yes,
class.
Absolutely. So they were all turning pro. I was the only one that went to college, so I wasn't anticipating staying in college for all 4 years anyway. Maybe I'd go for a max of 2 years. So after the first year of college, won the NCAA, I decided to turn professional. But I think there was a second reason there. And at the time, I was struggling in college spiritually. And I think even though I believe that I really didn't become truly repentant about my life and truly saved until I was 24, about 5 years later, something inside of me knew that if I stayed in college in that difficult environment, that I wasn't prepared to deal with it at all. Hmm. And so I think that was maybe 15% of the decision, but maybe 85% was the
yes.
tennis.
Well, you've written a book called The University of Destruction as compared to Instruction.
Yeah.
And it's about trying to keep your faith on a college campus. We want to talk some more about it. Also with us is Noah Reiner, whom I have also known about for a while. I heard him as a guest on the Laura Ingraham show and was homeschooled.
That's right.
For, I guess, 11 of your 12 years, right? And your
yes,
mom,
sir.
As I understand it, homeschooled six of you.
The whole pack of us.
The whole pack.
Everybody went through the Reiner Training School.
And you learned to know about Jesus Christ and make a commitment to him very early, didn't you?
Yes, sir. Very early on, around 7 years old, my parents said it was pretty unusual that I just came to them and said, I want to be right with God. And I prayed a prayer, and to the best of my seven-year-old ability, I wanted to love God. And around the age of 14, I recommitted my life to Christ when I could more fully understand what that meant and what it meant to give up your life and to take up the cross daily.
Well, there's so much more there we want to talk about also, but let me take a tangent for just a minute. Having been homeschooled for everything but the fourth grade, how did you do academically at Dartmouth?
Very well, if I guess I can say that. My parents homeschooled me because they thought that I could be better prepared spiritually and academically by being homeschooled, and the kind of education that I received prepared me very well. I immediately, upon getting to campus, was able to fit into the social aspect. I was elected class president within the first 2 weeks of school and made some decent grades my first term there. Not bad at all.
Well, let's fast forward for 3.5 years and talk about what you were saying on the Laura Ingraham show, because you did something there as student body president that brought national attention to you and many radio programs and newspapers and television shows wanted you as a guest, and we're honored that you would be here today. But what did you do that stirred up so much excitement?
Well, I'm currently the student body president at Dartmouth, and every year at the beginning of each academic year, there's a convocation ceremony. And at that ceremony, the president of the college speaks and welcomes the new class of freshmen. All the professors and faculty are there. About half of the upper class body that decided to wake up that morning is there. And the student body president also gives a speech at that convocation ceremony. And so I gave a speech that was a little unusual. I'd read the past five or six student body president speeches, and they lacked a sense of urgency and lacked content that would make people think and consider life and greater issues of meaning and purpose. And so I wanted to kind of stir things up in a intelligent way and give people something to think about.
Now, this is right at the beginning of the year for the new freshmen coming in. So this is called a convocation. And in fact, we've got a little soundbite that we're going to share in just a minute. But let's continue to explain. Now, Noah, you spoke on character and just flat out gave your testimony.
You know, I wanted to say something that would be meaningful. And Dartmouth is an excellent school academically, one of the top colleges in the country and in the world for preparing students academically for a path of success. And one aspect that I think is sadly lacking from our training at a school like Dartmouth is character. Does it matter the kind of people we become? I think it does. A lot of educated people have gone wrong, and that's what I wanted to point to. I gave a few examples of some notorious Dartmouth alums who had strayed and who had used their educations for purposes that we would all agree are unfortunate and wrong. One was a Soviet spy. One was involved in a sexual abuse case.
With a 15-year-old.
Yes, sir. And just because you're well-educated and just because you're on a path for success doesn't mean that you're the sort of person you need to be. And that's what I wanted to highlight to this incoming class of freshmen.
But you gave Jesus Christ as an example of what character is all about.
Exactly. And as a Christian, there's really no better example. That's the only example I know is Jesus. So I brought up Jesus as an example of good character, that Jesus was someone who knew what needed to be done regardless of the pain and suffering, and he did the right thing. And using Jesus as an example, I couldn't stop there. I had to, for conscience sake, explain who Jesus was, that he's not just an example, he's much more than that, and that he is the answer to flawed people, to sinful people like you and me.
Well, with that, let's hear just a little bit of that speech, which must have rocked the faculty and some others, some students who were there, and hear just how explicit you were about your faith.
Character has a lot to do with sacrifice, laying our personal interests down for something greater. The best example of this is Jesus. In the Garden of Gethsemane, just hours before his crucifixion, Jesus prayed, "Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." He knew the right thing to do. He knew that the cost would be agonizing, torture, and death, but he did it anyway. That's character. It's so easy to focus on the defects of others and ignore my own, but I need saving as much as they do. Jesus' message of redemption is simple. People are imperfect, and there are consequences for our actions. He gave his life for our sin, so that we wouldn't have to bear the penalty of the law, so we could see love. The problem is me. The solution is God's love, Jesus on the cross for us.
Noah, I already am aware that there were people that became very, very angry at you for that and criticized you. You took a lot of flack for it, didn't you?
Yes, sir. The initial reaction was incredibly intense. There was just shock. People were shocked that I would go up in front of the student body and not just point to a religious faith, but a very specific one, and claim that it was true.
Where'd you get the courage to do that?
Well, I just thank God for the courage that he gave me. It's something that my parents have definitely get some credit for instilling in me, and that doing the right thing.
Did the Lord lead you to do this? Did you feel a sense of mission in
definitely, doing it? Definitely. I knew that this is an incredible opportunity to speak to over 1,000 of the future leaders of America and of the world, and I didn't want to pass that up. I didn't want to waste that by cracking meaningless jokes and just kind of giving people exactly what they expected to hear. I was very surprised, though, at the reaction, at how intense it was. There was, I obviously knew that many people would disagree with me, that many people would absolutely think what I said was wrong, and I was fine with that, and that's acceptable. My main goal was to be able to say something that God was proud of, and to say something that I would look back on and know that God had used me in that way.
David, having been on a university campus and knowing a lot about what that environment is like, you must also be impressed by the fact that Noah was willing to do this.
Absolutely. I heard about it right afterwards. I do a radio program back in Minneapolis, so I actually read the transcript of it. And I didn't hear the interview on Laura's show, but I did watch the video of it on the internet. And to be honest, even as a Christian, I was astounded that someone would have the courage to get up in front of a secular audience like that. And not only a secular audience, but on a college campus like that, I mean, there are radical humanists, secular humanists who hate the name of Christ. And it took a lot of courage, and it was quite moving to me. I know that he probably couldn't come from him himself, from Noah himself. It must have come from a spiritual life, the Holy Spirit deep within, to have that courage, the boldness to be able to speak that. So I knew the reaction would be strong, though.
Yeah, especially since what he was putting on the line was his own reputation as student body president. You know, and instead of being someone that's revered and respected and maybe looked up to, a large number of people would now see you as kind of kooky. That took something.
Right.
I mean, I am impressed, my friend.
People's reaction was just astonishment. They treated me as if I were a dinosaur. They could not believe that someone who's educated could believe in a very specific faith that claimed to be the only way to heaven, and that someone with a faith like that would speak up. And
your parents must have been busting their buttons when this happened.
I think they are proud of me.
I was trying to figure out how he got elected student body president with views like that. Well, I wouldn't even think at a school like Dartmouth, how did that come to pass?
You know, for all that schools like Dartmouth talk about diversity, there is some appreciation of people from a different viewpoint, and they didn't see that as something that would affect or come into play with my role as student body president. And so it certainly was an issue. It came up in the campaign that my dad was a pastor And I was very open about it in my different advertisements and trying to convince people to vote for me. I let people know where I was coming from and didn't try to hide my faith from anyone. So people knew, in a sense, what they were getting, that my faith in Christ is part of who I am. It is who I am. And that that was reflected by my convocation speech.
Now, I think I remember that Laura Ingraham asked whether or not the administration gave you a hard time. And I think you said no.
The administration stayed out of it, really. There was a huge campus uproar. I had friends who quit talking to me. One of my vice presidents in the student government resigned in protest because she could no longer work with me, someone that held views like mine. A petition was circulated among different campus religious groups to call for an apology on my part. Lines were drawn and people took sides.
Wasn't Dartmouth a Christian school in the early days of its history?
Dartmouth was founded by a New Light minister, Eleazar Wheelock, who's one of the proponents of the First Great Awakening, friends with Jonathan Edwards and with George Whitfield.
How the world has changed, huh, David?
The motto of Dartmouth is Vox Clamantis in Deserto, voice crying in the wilderness, which is what John the Baptist was saying, running around the wilderness of on a different side of the world, preparing the way for the Lord Jesus Christ. And Eleazar Wheelock's vision was to create a school that would send out missionaries to Native American Indians. And the original vision is pretty far.
David, having gone to Stanford, as we indicated, for a year, talk about what that experience was like. You were raised in a Christian home, but you got away from it, and you were enticed by the world during that time.
Yes, I was. I was raised in a very, I have great Christian parents, and they raised me wonderfully, went to church and read the Bible in the home. I made a very early profession of faith when I was 5 years old, but as I got into my teenage years, in the more of the tennis environment and traveling a lot and so forth, I begin to feel like, and I think a lot of teenagers feel this way, I feel like they're sort of missing out on what their friends are doing, that kind of thing. And as I got into high school, I started to get off course. And then when I went to college, of course, it just continued. But going to Stanford was a shock right away. I remember when I entered my dorm room for the very first time, I dropped my bags on the floor. No sooner had I dropped them on the floor than two teammates came in the room, pitchers of beer in hand. You know, the party already started. The first several days of school was just, you know, rampant partying on campus, whether it was, you know, drinking, sexual morality by the students all over the place. It was a shock. And then as I went to my first class, which was the great core class at Stanford, which was the great works of Western culture, which they don't even have anymore because of the whole multicultural influx. They don't consider a lot of the great works of Western culture the great works anymore. But anyway, I was still in the curricula then, and I went to that class, and the first books we were to read were the books of Genesis and Job. Hmm. And I thought, oh, well, this shouldn't be too much trouble. I mean, I grew up in a Christian home, and I probably don't need to read them. I've already read them before, but I was just in the class one day, the students and the teacher just started ripping, I guess is the only way you could say, on God for how foolish he was and how he designed and how many contradictions there were. And then it went on from the Genesis and Job. Then it got, of course, it went on to all the great, quote, humanistic philosophers like Kant and Hume and, you know, Nietzsche and all these for the rest of the semester went into all those. And I really had no idea what they were even talking about, the different worldviews they were putting forth. But all the students, other students seemed to be knowing. And of course, the professor had very much of a, you know, he taught them as if they were not only equally valid, but more valid in a way, if I recall correctly.
So your faith got assaulted from two levels. One is behavioral and what you saw happening on campus and the enticements that were there and what other people were doing. And then intellectual.
Right.
When everything you'd been taught was subjected to ridicule.
Yeah, I call these the three pillars of peril. I think they summarize everything a Christian student is going to face in college. And number one is sexual immorality. That's a battle for the body. The second one is a battle for the spirit. That's drugs and alcohol. And the third one is a battle for the mind, which is humanism. It's a worldview, an ideology. And I think I faced all those, you know, within a few days of arriving at Stanford.
There are times when this program seems to go by far too fast for me, because I am really interested in what I'm hearing. And I believe that many parents, grandparents, and students are also interested in it. What goes on college campuses today? I'm speaking mainly of secular universities, but let's be honest, some Christian colleges too, because students come from the world. They come from secular high schools. Many of them do not have Christian parents, and some of the same behavior takes place there. And some professors are not quite so sure that they agree with the traditional teachings of the Bible. So it is very important for us to understand where our kids are going to go to school and what they're going to experience there, how to choose a college, how to prepare them for that shock, David, that you talked about.
Yeah,
and how to keep their faith.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the Christian college aspect, too. A lot of parents and a lot of students think just because they go to a, quote, Christian college that things are going to be a lot safer. The Bible is going to be taught in its literal interpretation and so forth. But I have some statistics at the end of the book that show the fact that students who go to Protestant colleges or historically Protestant colleges, actually a higher percentage of them will say after 4 years that they've lost their faith than if they go to just a regular public university.
How do we
explain
that one?
Which is truly astounding. Well, I think it's fairly... Well, this is my guess at it, at least. I think it's easy to explain in that just what you just mentioned. It's the fact that the Bible is deconstructed. It's not taken as authoritative, as inspired, as inerrant. It's taken as, you know, it's up to ourselves to interpret it the way we want to, depending on what social agenda we want to push. And so you see this so many times. This is actually, I think, more confusing, Dr. Dobson, in many ways than going to a college like Dartmouth, where it's very black and white. You go to a Christian college like this, it can be very, very difficult for a Christian student to stay on track.
Those are truly powerful insights from two men who understand how difficult it is for Christian college and university students to withstand challenges to their faith in Christ on campus. On that note, we have reached the midpoint of our two-part conversation on the theme of staying strong in college on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Our guests today have been David Wheaton, former world-class tennis professional and now host of the syndicated radio program called The Christian Worldview, along with Noah Reiner, who at the time of this recording was serving as president of the Associated Student Body at Dartmouth College. If you'd like an audio CD of both parts of this two-part discussion, call toll-free 877-732-6825. Again, the toll-free number to call is 877-732-6825. As I mentioned at the start of the program, David Wheaton is the author of the book University of Destruction, Your Game Plan for Spiritual Victory on Campus. We have a link for that book on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. If this program has been a benefit to you and the college student in your life, be sure to call our new listener feedback line and let your voice be heard. Call toll-free 844-823-2669. Again, the toll-free number to call is 844-823-2669. Finally, thanks for remembering that Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk is completely listener-supported. You can make your tax-deductible donation securely online when you go to drjamesdobson.org. You can make your contribution over the phone when you call toll-free at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh. Be sure to join us again next time when we welcome back to the studio David Wheaton and Noah Reiner to continue the conversation about staying strong in college. Be sure to join us right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, President of the American Association of Christian Counselors and Executive Director of the Center for Counselor Education and Family Studies at Liberty University. I'm so excited to tell you about a brand new center that we've started at Liberty. It's called the James C. Dobson Center for Child Development, Marriage and Family Studies. Why is it so significant? Well, what's amazing about it is you can go back to school, and regardless of your major, you can now get a minor from Dr. James Dobson, a minor in marriage and family, maybe a minor in child development, or a minor in family advocacy. And you can become even a certified marriage and family relationship coach by going through those programs. It's an amazing opportunity to help impact your personal life and your relationships, to give you a great opportunity for ministry, and to maybe fulfill that calling that God's placed on your life to help other people. I can't wait for you to learn more about the courses, program of study, and you're going to have an opportunity to learn from Dr. James C. Dobson and other selected professionals through this program. I can't wait for you to learn more about these programs of study and hopefully join us at Liberty. Go to liberty.edu/Dobson. You can learn more by going simply to liberty.edu/Dobson. Again, that website is liberty.edu/Dobson.
Hey everyone, Roger Marsh here. When you think about your family and where they will be when you're no longer living, are you worried? Are you confident? Are you hopeful? What kind of legacy are you leaving for your children and their children? Here at Family Talk, we're committed to helping you understand the legacy that you're leaving for your family. Join us today at drjamesdobson.org for helpful insights, tips, and advice from Dr. James Dobson himself. And remember, your legacy matters.